Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
/12:18 right here on Grant and Danny. We will rank our top five candidates for the MVP award in the NFL. We will compare those lists and see how they stack up. It's coming up next. But right now, our Beltway Blitz, three teams in town you care about in one segment to kick off the second half of the show. Chris Russell helping us get set for Skins Jags. It is a football and a Redskins Friday. We'll talk Nats and Caps coming up in moments. Chris, let's start with Josh Johnson. We just spent an hour talking about expectations for him. How do you think he plays on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm kind of with you guys. I think he'll be very, very inconsistent in the passing game, not only because he's not a good passer, but oftentimes with mobile quarterbacks, their mechanics are out of whack, and they can't – people say, well, we'll just boot them out and just sprint them out and design – oftentimes their mechanics are worse. This is what happened with Robert Griffin. This is what happens with so many mobile quarterbacks is people talk about, well, use their legs to find them free lanes and space and all that stuff. A lot of times their mechanics are worse out of the pocket than in the pocket because they're on the run and they don't remember to set and flip their hips and all that stuff. So that's a problem for Josh Johnson, in my opinion. I do think he'll be very good moving the football or moving the football through the ground in terms of, breaking some contain. The Jaguars don't blitz a lot, so that maybe hurts him a little bit, I think, just because that's when I really like to have a mobile quarterback. But going back to the passing game, this is not a good matchup for him, not with A.J. Boye and also Jalen Ramsey locking down. The Jaguars are only allowing, I think it's 202 passing yards per game.
Russell, Jacksonville's offense is like regret fighting with hopelessness. It's they sicken me. I hate them. I hate everything about what they want to do, try to do, etc. It's not the modern NFL. It's a lot like what the Redskins are doing for most of the season as well. Might this be the thing that gets the Redskins defense at least some, good feelings here as they head towards the end of the season?
I mean, it should, but don't forget, they have, they have Leonard Fournette, right? And they have decent talent at receiver. Of course, they lost a lot of guys via free agency, and then losing Marquise Lee to a torn ACL earlier in the year. They've been decimated, as have the Redskins, by injury. So they don't have the weapons necessarily that would break your back. But I don't know how we just sit here and go, this Jaguar defense or offense is not going to be able to hurt the Redskins defense when they haven't proven to stop anybody. They can't tackle. They're in the wrong gap. They're wrong assignments. And I'll just go one step further. In the last six games, the Redskins defense, run defense, has allowed 4.99 yards per carry. 4.99 yards per carry. Tell me how I'm supposed to feel confident that they're just going to go in there and shove it to Leonard Fournette and shut down this Jaguar offense.
Russell, what would lead at the end of Sunday to you saying Jay Gruden's in a pretty good spot? And what would lead to you saying, I think he's done?
I mean, I think he's in a pretty decent spot. I don't know if I would say pretty good. I think he's in a pretty decent spot entering the game. So let's start there. If they get shellacked 30-0, I would say that's a really, really, really bad indictment on Jay. I would also point out, that last week, as bad as the defense was, they were good early, and they were really bad once Sanchez threw the pick six, and it was almost like they just folded like a cheap suit. This team has no mental toughness, no tenacity, no ability to dig deep and overcome adversity like the Chargers did last night and for the last several weeks without Gordon and all the injuries. They have none. So they fold over like a cheap suit. So if it's 28-0, 31-0 at the end of Sunday or something similar to what we saw last Sunday against the Giants, then Jay certainly can be in a lot of trouble.
They do fold like a cheap suit, but who ties their tie, Russell? That is a mystery for another time.
That's a good point. I had Dave Preston from the other radio station tie my tie at the press box at the Capitals game the other night.
Love it. You are our guy. Appreciate the time, buddy.
Thank
Enjoy
you,
the
boss.
Weekend. There he goes. I want to talk baseball, please, Tommy. Jamal Collier covers the Nationals for MLB.com. Jamal, what does the Tanner Roark trade mean? On its face, they lost a guy that's going to give them 190 innings and take the ball every fifth day for a reliever that may or may not help them, but there's got to be more to it, right?
And I think that's the thing that well, I'm kind of holding up judgment on this trade. I think that, you know, you look at what Tanner Roark was going to get paid next year, but probably somewhere around $10 million for a guy who is, you know, at this point had over a 4 ERA 3 of the past 4 years. And I think that as further and further we get from 2016, the further, you know, that kind of looks like somewhat of an anomaly and just kind of not going to be the norm here going forward for Tanner. So Mets figure, hey, we can get the going rate right now for those kind of back-end rotation starters of free agency is a lot less than $10 million, so we can probably get one, if not two guys, to kind of fill that spot. Think about a guy like Tyson Ross just signed with Detroit for a year and $5 million. You can get a couple of those guys and try to fill in those 180 innings going from Tanner in kind of a smarter way. I don't think it's a cost saving measure here. I think it's the one that's going to take that money and kind of reallocate it to the rest of the rotation.
Jamal, if you had to guess right now, if they were to make one trade and try to go target someone, either what position, maybe what player would they target? Who could be given up in that deal? What could you see them doing?
I mean, I don't trade. I mean, look at their holes right now. I think starting pitching, I think second base seems to be an option. I think that, you know, just kind of some other little pieces. So that's why I think about a trade. I think the free agency might be the best way to kind of fill some of those. Just because I think that the kind of top half of those prospects seem to be somewhat off the board. I think that, you know, obviously Victor Robles is probably not going anywhere. Carter Kieboom, they don't want to trade Luis Garcia. They don't seem really interested in trading Michael Taylor either this year. So, I mean, a lot of the guys, the pieces they kind of have seem like they're not really that willing to trade a lot of them. You know, I think that it'd have to take a really good offer. So I'm dancing around the answer to this question here because I just don't know if that's, unless something presents itself that they kind of can't pass up, I'm not sure that's the market, that's the way they're going to attack this, just because I think they're not really willing to part with a lot of their major league, you know, their major league ready prospects and then just the other kind of guys around their system. I mean, they have outfielders. I think that's maybe the one play that they could do it. But again, Michael Taylor is a guy who they are trying to rework his swing in winter ball right now. And they seem committed to say that he can help them. And they also know the importance of the fourth outfielder just because of the question marks of the other guys. So, yeah, I mean, that's me dancing around the answer a little bit, but I think that free agency is right now kind of where the focus is, and so we can kind of add to our weaknesses right now with free agency.
Jamal, super quick, three-part question here. Who opens up at opening day second base for the Nationals? Who will ride a dragon in the final season of Game of Thrones besides Khaleesi, and who would you want to see ride a dragon? Probably Rhaegar.
Opening day second baseman will be Howie Kendrick. I think that they'll still find him, and they'll sign like another kind of hybrid Neil Walker type that can play second base and first base and kind of use that. But I think Howie Kendrick gets the nod on first base. And I got to go with Jon Snow. And, Jon Snow and the Night King riding 101 in a dragon battle. I'm here for it.
Jamal, thank you, pal.
Thanks, guys.
See you, dude.
It's hockey time. Rob Carlin, NBC Sports Washington, pre and post with Alan May. Rob, Tom Wilson back tonight.
He's back.
Going to be a fun night. What do we think? What do we expect?
I mean, does it matter really? Like, Wilson's out. Oshie's out. Kuzi's out. That team just keeps on winning. Someone the other day said to me, do you think they're peaking too early? I was like, no, this is who they are. They're a really good team. They're the Stanley Cup champs. So, I mean, it is great that Wilson's back. I find it interesting that they have him, at least in morning skates, we're expecting him to be on the second line with Kuzi and Vrana, which I think is what Alan had predicted the other night. But, it's great to have Tom Wilson back in the lineup, and, this team eventually will be whole again.
Uncle Rob, what's going on with Christian Juice? What the hell happened? Why is he out indefinitely? What's the deal?
Yeah, I don't know. We're going to go back through the tape later. Our producer, Ryan Billy, was like, I spoke to him a while ago. He was like, well, I guess I know what I'm doing today. I'm going through the tape to see if I could find an injury. I don't know. That one caught us all by surprise today. And to hear, you know, he's going to be out a substantial time, that's not good for Juice, who's become a pretty reliable third-pair guy, but it's a great opportunity now for Jonas Siegenthaler, who they've been, you know, getting minutes. They feel comfortable. I know the brass loves his size. They think he can be an impact-type player. And we're going to find out now. So, you know, this is where the Orpik injury is actually going to come back and help them, because it allowed time for these young guys to get some minutes, and now Siegenthaler is going to see extended time over the next few weeks.
They've won 10 of 12. I never really thought they had a hangover. I thought they had a terrible early schedule in terms of weird days off and things. But it does seem like they're now rolling, as you mentioned, despite the injuries as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, that hangover thing, I think the quote-unquote hangover is just the you can't replicate. The last time they were all on the ice together playing competitive games, it was at the absolute highest level, highest intensity for two straight months. So I think there's part that it was the schedule, and it was an odd schedule, but I think it was also part that they just couldn't sort of manufacture that intensity. And it just took a while for them to start blocking shots again, start going to the corners and winning pucks. You know, all those things that led them to winning, you just can't manufacture that necessarily. And I think that took a while. So, but we went back and found, you know, the last handful of Stanley Cup champs, and their start was right at, if not better than almost every other team. And I think that's just because, you know, you just come back and, you know, you're sort of going through the motions. After that, the amazing rush of raising the banner, then I think you sort of get into a rut. And, man, have they worked their way out of that rut. So, yeah, it's good to see them winning. And, by the way, before I know you're going to let me go now, I just started Game of Thrones. Never seen an episode. Watched my first one yesterday. So I literally had no idea what you're talking about. But the journey has begun, and winter is coming.
Winter is coming. Rob, I hope the gout is always managed and under control. We will talk to you soon, brother.
All right, see you, boys.
Thanks, Unc. There's Rob Carlin, boys and girls of NBC Sports Washington. Check him out. Pregame tonight, I got a 6 o'clock pregame show. He's got 6:30 on NBCSW. Here's what we're doing, Danny. Next, top five MVP candidates in football. You guys can chime in if you want at 800-636-1067. I got a list. Danny's got a list. We'll compare in moments. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan.
You were right, by the way. 2012, you were right.
Adrian Peterson?
Yep, you were right.
We were talking about MVP candidates in the NFL. I pointed out that running backs win every 6 years. 2006. 2012, and maybe 2018, depending on where you think Todd Gurley should factor in. I don't think he's going to win, but there is a streak he could continue. Let's get into our MVP rankings here. 12:45, we can rank the best NFL games of the weekend, and at 1 o'clock, J.P. Shadrick covers the Jaguars, and Jacksonville is going to join us to talk Skins and Jags, give you some details on the opponent. Start at number 5, Danny, your number 5 MVP candidate.
Andrew Luck. Having an absolutely incredible year for a team that really isn't very good. He has done the bit where he single-handedly puts them in contention each and every week. The numbers speak for themselves. They're excellent. He has been awesome from start to finish. He is my number 5 guy. Healthy. The league is better with him in it. He's not one of those dynamic, big loudmouth type stars. Just kind of keeps grinding and throws the tight ends. He is been excellent this year.
Yeah, so here's what's important to know from my list, because I think it's going to look a little bit different than a lot of lists. I go with the word value being so important here. I don't do the most outstanding player. I don't do the best player. I don't do the best statistical player. I don't do the guy I would most want on my team. What I do is, if I took this guy off this team, how much would they suffer? It's why I would have had Peyton Manning win a lot more MVPs than I did over the years. However, that said, I put Andrew Luck number 5 as well. And I put Andrew Luck number 5 because if you take them off the Colts, we saw it last year, by the way, they become a shell of themselves. You take Andrew Luck off the Colts, that team is not only not in the playoff hunt, but right now is a team that could get in as a wild card. I think they're a disaster. You saw it with Jacoby Brissett, 3,800 yards, 34 touchdowns. He'll end up with probably mid-40s touchdowns and around 4,400 yards, a quarterback rating right around 100. It's been an incredible season for Luck. He's number 5 on my list as well. Who's number 4?
Number 4 for me, and I generally, you know my feeling about running backs. You can watch third-string running backs have great games like you just saw last night for Kansas City. But you're going to end up with well over 2,000 total yards again. You're going to end up with in the mid-20s in terms of total touchdowns from Todd Gurley. I know that's a benefit of this offense.
Todd,
et cetera. But Gurley's having another incredible season. He, in my mind, shouldn't win it, but needs to be on the podium because when you add up all those counting numbers, it's absurd.
It really is. I'm surprised you have him in your top five because you do devalue the running back position
absolutely
so much. But I've got him number four as well. 1,200 rushing yards. He's going to go for close to 1,500. He will end up catching somewhere around 65 balls, I think, this year. He's over 500 yards receiving. I think that number is going to be around 700. Last year it was almost 800. He's going to have five or six receiving touchdowns to go along with probably 17 to 18 rushing touchdowns this year. He's magnificent. He makes a lot of plays, by the way, that are not designed. He averages 40 yards per game after the catch. He's got 429 yards in yak this season.
The Redskins have a team, by the way, only have, I think, 60 more yards than that as a team.
I know. It's crazy. There are only two guys in the league with more yak yards than him this season. Saquon Barkley and George Kittle. That is the list. Todd Gurley is special. He's unique. He's a game changer. So that, for me, is my number four guy as well. Who's number three?
Phil Rivers. This is the guy that nobody's talking about. Gaudy numbers, right around 4,000 yards, 31 touchdowns, 8 picks. Gordon, in and out of the lineup, doesn't matter. Eckler, in and out of the lineup, doesn't matter. Keenan Allen, out of the lineup, doesn't matter. He has been awesome. They have offensive line issues. They get banged up. It doesn't matter. Phil Rivers just keeps chugging along for an 11-3 team that right now still would be the 5 seed based on tiebreakers, but they've got a chance at home field throughout the playoffs. He has been sensational. And because he's playing second fiddle in the market to the Los Angeles Rams, playing at a soccer stadium in front of tens of people, nobody's really talking about him for this. He has been so good. He'll end up with around, I'd say, 4,700 yards and probably 40 touchdowns and around 10 picks. What a season. What a player.
Love Phil Rivers. You will see him on my list as well. Not yet. Number three for me is a guy that I think has a real good chance to win the MVP. And I'll bet that most people would actually put him number one on their list right now. Pat Mahomes of the Kansas City Chiefs. Pat Mahomes is number three for me in the MVP chase for a couple reasons. But let me go back to my point on value. What I look at is supporting cast. What I look at is basically the amount put on your plate. With Pat Mahomes, I think he's got one of the great play callers and play designers in the NFL working on his behalf in Andy Reid. I think that's an immensely impressive offense. The evidence I'd point to is the fact that Alex Smith, who I think is basically a Jag, was phenomenal in that offense last year. Had a Pro Bowl season. You take Pat Mahomes off of the Chiefs offense, and you put in a pretty good quarterback like Alex Smith. Nobody that's great, but a pretty good quarterback. You still probably get to 10, 11 wins. You make the playoffs pretty substantially as a wild card, and guys like Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt get theirs. That offense works with anybody at quarterback who's not terrible. Now, it's better this year. It's 40 points instead of 33 points. It's amazing because Pat Mahomes is one of the greatest talents we've seen in the NFL over the last bunch of years. If I'm giving out an award for most outstanding player, by the way, I would give that award to Pat Mahomes. But I look at the Chiefs. At the time of the Kareem Hunt release, okay, so that's going back a couple of weeks ago, they had three of the top 20 players in the league in yards after catch. With Travis Kelce, who still is just outside of the top 10, I think, at 307. Tyreek Hill turns a lot of smokes and bubbles and quick hitch stuff into 60-yard gains and touchdowns. He's got almost 300 yak yards this year.
The screen game's incredible.
And Kareem Hunt, when he was released, was in the top 20 in the league. He still ranks, despite not playing the last three games, in the top 20, I think 28 in the league in yards per catch right now. So, for me, I just think it's about weapons around Mahomes, and that breaks the tie. Again, I'm not trying to say anything negative about him, but I'm looking at other guys. I look at an offense where Kelce might be the best tight end in the league right now. Tyreek Hill is the best speed guy in the league right now. Kareem Hunt was one of the best dual-front running backs in the league right now. All those guys help him a lot, buoy him a lot, so I put him third to kind of break my tie with how I feel about the other guys. Number two for you.
Drew Brees. What an unbelievable season. The yardage totals aren't quite where we usually expect them, but 31 touchdowns, only four interceptions. They dealt with not having Mark Ingram. Kamara hasn't had the same year, which you couldn't possibly expect that. You know, 6 yards per carry last year was absurd. So they've relied on him. It's been Michael Thomas. It's a rotating cast of tight ends. He comes off the field sometimes for Taysom Hill. it's a group of people that you would not recognize in a police lineup
yep.
that catching passes besides Michael Thomas. Breeze has that team poised to win the NFC, have home field advantage. He has been absolutely marvelous from start to finish. Drew Brees, number two for me.
I got Phillip Rivers, number two. I think if you take Phillip Rivers off the Chargers and forget who their backup is right now, and I honestly don't even remember who it is, but you just put a replacement-level quarterback on that team, they fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
You saw last night what he means to that group. He is a wildly underrated passer. He's going to end up this year with maybe a hair shy of or right around 40 touchdowns and somewhere around 10 to 11 interceptions. Forget those numbers for a second. Forget that his quarterback rating 112 is right there with Mahomes and Breeze and everybody else. Again, I go back to the value. They've got a good running game when all things are sunny and equal. But a lot of weeks, that's not the case. Now, Melvin Gordon, when he comes back, I think becomes a workhorse for them. They've got a pretty solid defense, certainly better than Kansas City's, which I like. But they get into a lot of shootouts, and he's got to sling the ball around. I love Keenan Allen, but he doesn't have a Michael Thomas. He doesn't have a Tyreek Hill. It's a completely different world. It's a lot of checking it down to Austin Eckler, working the middle of the field to a 36-year-old tight end.
38?
Or 38, even better. Not Travis Kelce. His weapons are worse, I would even say, than Breeze's, who I'm going to have win it, spoiler alert, and certainly than Mahomes's. So that's why I've got Rivers a tick above Mahomes. I just think, again, replacement level standpoint, how many war is the guy worth? The Chargers are worse if they lose Rivers than the Chiefs are if they lose Mahomes.
I get it. I'll give you my number one next. We're up against it.
All right. I'll do my number one. I already told you it's Breeze, and I'll give you my reasoning next. Let's take some calls on this, though. Where are you guys at on this? 800-636-1067. Who should win the MVP award in the NFL? I guess we know who yours is. It's Pat Mahomes. And mine is Drew Breeze. Where do you weigh in on that? And we'll give our reasoning behind those two guys next on G&D.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Who is your MVP of the National Football League? We just gave you our top five lists. We have not yet really explained our reasoning on our number one, so we can do that now. I went Breeze, top of the board, Rivers, second, Patty Mahomes, third, Todd Gurley, four, Andrew Luck, five.
Number five for me, Andrew Luck. Number four, Todd Gurley. Number three, Phil Rivers. Number two, Drew Breeze. All excellent seasons, all memorable. The answer is Pat Mahomes.
We have the same five, by the way.
Just different order.
And our four and five are the same. The top three are jumbled up.
Pat Mahomes is going to have 40% more touchdowns than the rest of the league. Pat Mahomes is going to lead the league in yardage. He's going to lead the league in what happens on average when you throw the football and how positive is it. He's going to lead the league in everything that you can measure by a lot, a huge margin. He's had the best season. And we punish him, or I guess in your case, you punish him for scheme and design. It's not as if Drew Brees is making stuff up as he goes. They've had nothing but great offenses.
It's a good offense.
They're a good team now because their defense is finally competent again. You look at teams like San Diego, I did it again, Los Angeles. They've got a top 10 defense as well, Hunter Henry, LaDainian Tomlinson. But they've got a top 10 defensive unit. So they haven't always won games putting up 30, 40 points. They were able to win some 22-20 type games. That can't happen in Kansas City. They've got to go out and score in the 30s every single week, and Mahomes has done that. He has been the best player in the league this year. Some of the highlights are doing things that nobody else can do, and then it matches up with some of the counting stats. He'll be well over 50 touchdowns. Only a couple guys are going to get to 40 even. Then you add in how well he's taking care of the football, some of the rushing yards, the plays where there's nothing there. This, to me, is the year of Pat Mahomes. And if it's given to somebody else, it'll go to Breeze as kind of a, hey, did you guys know he hasn't actually won one of these yet? He should probably do it, and Mahomes will have a chance to do it in the future. But the best player in the NFL this season has been Pat Mahomes.
I agree with you. That's not who I give my MVP award to. That could be your most outstanding player. And as I said, if I'm voting for a most outstanding player award, it's Pat Mahomes. It's not close. Oftentimes, in not just football, but in other sports as well, my MVP is not always the guy that wins it. I really stress that word value. It matters a lot to me. And that is not to say we're picking nits between the three most deserving people in the league, right? Mm-hmm. So if Pat Mahomes wins the award, I'm not going to be upset. The best guy in football won the MVP award. That's awesome. For me, I think Drew Brees is more valuable to the Saints than Pat Mahomes is to the Chiefs. I just do. I also think being as many years in and running the program the way that Drew Brees does is different than being a rookie quarterback kind of dropped into things this year with an offense with a bunch of veterans around him that probably help with some of the leadership things that Brees is doing in New Orleans, which could be a tiebreaker as well.
Yeah, if you're asked who has to do more team-wise, which is kind of nebulous, but I know exactly what you're saying. It's
who
Drew
is
Brees.
More valuable to their team? I think it's Drew Brees to the Saints than Pat Mahomes to the Chiefs. Now, you mentioned taking care of the football. Pat Mahomes has thrown 11 interceptions.
Yes.
Drew Brees has thrown 4.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Brees has thrown the ball 415 times. Pat Mahomes has thrown the ball 346 times. And by the way, has played one more game at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Who is asked to do more? Drew Brees is. Every single week. He throws the ball more. And his overall offense, I think, relies more on him being great, as you saw against Dallas, than Mahomes' does, where I don't think he's got to be great. In fact, last night, early on in that game, I think he started 8 of 13, something like that. He made a couple of just stupid plays. I was tweeting about how amazing he is running and throwing and all these things. But he wasn't particularly accurate. He made one throw. Travis Kelce makes a stupid catch and makes someone miss and gets him into the red zone. Now, does Drew Brees not have help? Of course he has help. Alvin Kamara is third in the league in yards after the catch. Michael Thomas is one of the best receivers in the league. But that's kind of the end of the road for the Saints. They got a couple of really good players. I think the Chiefs have three unbelievable players on their offense up until they released one of them.
Right. Now they've got a similar amount. I mean,
Now it's comparable. And by the way, since that injury, they're 2-1. They've barely won the two games that they won, one of which was against the Raiders, and the other, they needed overtime against the Ravens. But that all said, again, I don't want to make this into taking anything away from Pat Mahomes. If he wins, great. The bigger debate to me is not Brees versus Mahomes, as much as I think if you're going to pick a nit with my list, it'd be how do you put Rivers over Mahomes? And again, that to me comes back to, I actually think Rivers probably has every bit as much on his plate as Drew Brees does. Week in and week out, if the Chargers are going to win, he's got to shine.
Well, even
the
beyond
only
that,
chance
Grant,
that they have.
You can even simplify it. Watch them last night. Watch the Chargers last night. They line up for a play. What Phil Rivers is doing is you go over there, you go over there, you go here, you go here, you go here, you go here. We get the snap off with 1 second left because
right.
He's telling everybody what to do on every aspect of a play, and positive yardage happens because of it. In terms of tasked, in terms of what to do, the load you got to carry, huge on him and Brees. Whereas I will fully agree that Mahomes is walking into a quarterback's dream, a ready-made situation.
I mean, ask Alex Smith about that offense. Redskins fans called in all offseason to tell us how good Alex Smith was because of how he looked last year in Andy Reid's offense.
And here's the brilliance of this. And
every quarterback's going to look a lot better in that offense.
Mahomes is going to put up twice as many touchdowns in the same offense. You have a competent guy in Smith, who's not, again, I think he's just fine. He is what he is. Mahomes is going to more than double his touchdown total.
It's
going to
be amazing.
It tells you the difference between when you've got a Jag and you've got a true superstar.
But when you take Mahomes off of the Chiefs, what are they with a Smith-type quarterback? They've won 12 games within the last two seasons. They're this year maybe going to win 13, go 13-3, let's say. That's if they go 2-0 down the stretch and they play Seattle. Mm-hmm. They might go 12-4, which will be the same record they had a couple years ago pre-Pat Mahomes. So I guess my point is, again, I come back to that word I can't get past, which is value. What are they without him? What are the Saints without Brees? What are the Chargers without Rivers? I think the Saints lose 6 wins if they lose Drew Brees. I think the Chargers lose 5 or 6 wins if they lose Phillip Rivers. I think if the Chiefs don't have Pat Mahomes, they probably lose this year 4 wins, something like that.
Right.
That's kind of my difference. It's just I think the other guys are worth maybe a win or two more playing in those different systems.
Yeah, you can definitely make that case all across the league. If the Colts don't have Luck,
yes,
they didn't have Manning, they go 1-15.
That's why he's in my top 5.
They're terrible. That's why it's, to me, this is a who's been the best this year?
Who
is the best player? And if we're doing relative value to teams, then we need to start considering you know, Khalil Mack or a good left tackle.
I consider him.
I just think it makes it much harder.
He's in my top eight, probably. Six, seven, eight.
I mean, if the Seahawks don't have Russell Wilson, what are they? I mean, he's also, by the way, he just missed my five. I almost wanted to include him because of the year he's had.
Really good. They have one of the best running games, actually the best running game in the league, and one of the best defenses in the conference. So my guess is they wouldn't miss him nearly as much, which is why he's not in my top five. I think a lot of guys can play well with the running game and the defense. But I think Russell Wilson's definitely in my top 10. He's had, like he has the last couple of years, a fantastic season. In fact, the last 2 years, Russell Wilson probably higher in my MVP rankings just because they didn't run it and play defense the way that they have.
Not at this level.
I do the same thing in baseball, by the way. Take the player away, what are they worth? It's value. We don't call it most outstanding player. We call it most valuable player. And you could define it kind of in your own way. If I was a voter, that's how I would do it. Everyone does it a little bit different. You could tweet us at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny, with your reactions to our top five. Speaking of rankings, the best games in the NFL this weekend. Danny will tell me where I'm wrong next. Hello, Grant and Dave. You ready for another weekend of football day?
Hello, Grant and Dave. Can you believe I'm in my office today? I can't believe it either, Day.
Still my office. I still got my pictures on the wall. They're not going anywhere. I'm not packing up this desk, Day.
There's a nameplate. What does it say? Bruce Allen. It says it, Day.
Playoff picture shaping up. Week 15. A lot of postseason relevant games, which is why I like this top five we put together.
Yeah.
The best game of the weekend's already been played.
We can agree there.
And it actually lived up to the hype. That doesn't happen very often.
Despite the unbelievably ticky-tack penalties that the referees love to call.
I think overall, a terrible game for the officials.
17 straight plays, numbers approximate, with penalties, and most of them were chicken-ass. I cannot stand officials in sports.
I will channel my coach Yost from Remember the Titans. Let the boys play, Mr. Official. Please. Just let the boys play. Can the teams decide the games, please? Thank you. I thought that was just a brutally officiated game.
Coverage is not holding.
Didn't ruin it for
me. That's
what
I'll say. Coverage is not holding. That's the last thing I'll say.
So here is the top five I put together for you. This is the best games of the weekend. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
You tell me what I get wrong here. The number one remaining game in the Week 15 slate is the Patriots and the Steelers. This game will be played toward the end of the weekend. 4:25 kick on Sunday at Heinz Field. Pittsburgh is 7-5-1, and they are suddenly taking on water. James Conner's been hurt, and because of that, they're showing some warts on offense, some bad, untimely interceptions from Ben Roethlisberger in the last month as well. They need a win big time. They lose to New England. They might get caught in the AFC North by the Baltimore Ravens.
You're right. Doesn't this feel like a Pittsburgh randomly circle the wagons game?
Kind of does.
Doesn't it to me?
They come in with three straight losses and a losing record in the last five and a half game up in the division.
It's like Roethlisberger under chaos. There's no good reason that they'll play well because they haven't played well in a month. But something about this tells me that they'll be an even match with New England.
They've actually been better on the road this year than at home, which doesn't make any sense either. Mm. But give me that as my number one game of Sunday, Patriots-Steelers. Number two game. I'm holding my nose as I say this, but I think this game's so important that it's got to be up this high. The 8-5 Cowboys looks like they're going to put the division away with a win. But this is huge for the AFC playoff picture. Indianapolis is 7-6. Mm-hmm. They're only two games back of Houston, so you don't have to rule them out in the AFC South yet. But the wild card picture in the AFC is super fun. You've got the Dolphins, Colts, Titans, Broncos, all within one game of the Steelers, who are the last team in right now. In fact, most of those teams are a half game back of Pittsburgh at this point. A Colts win and a Steelers loss, and at 8-6, Indy is in the driver's seat going into the final 2 weeks of the season.
And it's big for Dallas as well. I know it sounds dumb. I mean, I think they've got the division wrapped up. There's still some things to be determined there for sure. But this is a group that absolutely could catch Chicago for the 3 seed, for example, depending on what happens down the stretch. Only a game back there. Point is, that's a big matchup. Both teams, I think the Colts need it more. Dallas a little bit less desperate, but the way they've been playing on defense, I think that's actually an intriguing matchup.
Let's go to game number three for me, and that is the Saints and the Panthers. Similarly here, New Orleans now tied with Los Angeles for the best record in the NFC. Saints and Rams at 11-2. One of those teams gets home field advantage. This game is massive because if New Orleans gets the 1 seed, I'd go into the playoffs thinking they're getting to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
going to that building where our buddy Christian and those fans get so animated and so loud, and they play bow, 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 ba-dow, 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 bow, 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 132 times during the game.
Because that's every time they score, they play it? You hear it a lot.
Nobody wants to go there. Now, if they're in L.A., I think it's outdoors, a little bit different ballgame for them. So it's big on that front. But also, Carolina, four straight. As a matter of fact, it's even worse than that. I was going to give them four straight losses. For the Carolina Panthers right now, they've lost five consecutive games. Carolina was 6-2.
Yeah, they were.
They are 6-7. They've fallen apart. They are, though, only a half game back of the Minnesota Vikings right now. They're tied with the Eagles, they're tied with the Redskins, and they're a half game up on the Packers. Do you realize all six of the teams gunning for the last wild card spot have a losing record in the last five games?
Yuck.
Carolina, ravenous, New Orleans, hungry. NFC South, Rui can admit, I think, that that's going to be a good one.
It's a big one. And New Orleans in line, as you said, for home field. Carolina just in line to try to stay alive at this point. They're going to be desperate. I want to see how Cam Newton performs.
Vikings just as hungry. Minnesota right now the last team in, coming off of a game where they almost got shut out by the Seattle Seahawks. 6-6-1, fall below 500 with a loss. A lot of expectations coming into the year. Their offensive coordinator, John DeFilippo, just got fired. Mike Zimmer wants to run the ball more. Their high-priced quarterback, Kirk Cousins, has struggled the last 2 weeks. They have to win. They need to beat the Dolphins. I don't know why they're 7-point favorites. That's way too big a line for me, because Miami, on the other side of this thing, is the first team out in the AFC. A win at 8-6 and a Steelers loss, and they are in to the playoffs for the moment. So two teams on the playoff bubble, absolutely needing a victory means it's a good football game. And the last one I'll give you is Packers-Bears. Chicago still vying for, gunning for the higher seed over Dallas between the two teams that are not going to get byes that win divisions. On top of that, though, the Packers need to win out. If they can go 3-0 down the stretch, they'd finish 8-7-1. They would probably get in the way the NFC picture looks right now.
Crazy, right?
But they've got to win out. They got two cake games after this with the Jets and the Lions. The big test is the Bears. I like this game.
Game that I have that you don't is Philadelphia at the Rams Sunday night. No Carson Wentz. It's the Nick Foles show. Can they capture magic? They've been kind of putting it off, kicking the can down the road, talking about Philadelphia. Just haven't played well. Will they ever? And the Rams coming off a loss. The Rams showed some vulnerability this past week, getting spanked by a game Chicago team on the road. Fascinated by that one as it pertains to playoff seeding. Because keep in mind, the two juggernauts of the NFC, New Orleans and the Rams, are both playing important games, and they're going neck and neck. So that's kind of what I care about, because they're the two elite squads. So that one's in my top five. The others, I agree with you. I've got Minnesota with their intrigue, and Miami, even though I hate Miami so much. New Orleans and Carolina. Dallas and the Colts, I think you're right about that.
Why do you hate Miami so much?
They're so annoying. I can't stand
it. Is it
them.
Because you had them number three in your power rankings that one time?
No, it's because they're annoying.
And then they lost by
50? It's because they're annoying. I don't like them.
It's a little bit because of that, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's why I resent the Jaguars, because they embarrassed me that time. I put them in my rankings, and then they turn out to be a giant pile of steaming goo.
You know, I had the Jags number three in my power rankings at the beginning of this season, to start the year.
Yeah, for a couple weeks I had them. I don't know if I had them at first, but like I had them.
When they beat New England in September,
yeah, that's when I put them
really
in.
High.
That's when I put them in.
J.P. Shadrick, speaking of the terrible Jags, covers Jacksonville. Can they mount one more stellar performance? Can they handle the Redskins on Sunday? Do they have it in them defensively to shut Washington's bad offense down? We'll ask J.P. about that as we scout the opponent next.
My name is Danny Rouye, and I drive a Ford from Ted Britt Ford. My wife also drives a Ford from Ted Britt Ford. You'll see a theme here. We like going to Ted Britt Ford to get our cars. 2016 happens. We go there. We go. Let's try and drive a few of these SUVs, right? Let's figure out what we like. We test drove an Expedition, test drove the Explorer, the Escape. We settled on the Edge, and we loved it. Got a 2016 Edge, and it's great. That's the wife's vehicle. So you can get 2018 version, yes, of the Edge. How about for $7,500 off the MSRP on a new 2018 Ford Edge, plus 0% financing for 60 months. Great deal there. How about $8,500 off the MSRP on an Escape? Again, 0 financing, 60 months. $9,500 off the MSRP on an 18 Expedition, plus 0% financing for 60 months. And as always, when you buy from Ted Britt Ford, you get Ted Britt for life. That's lifetime vehicle coverage. New pre-owned does not matter. Anything less than 100,000 miles, you get it. You got to go see my guys at Pittsburgh Ford. Perfect. Until it, quick way to everything. And when you go please, help catch it.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.